Good morning, everybody. So today, no repetition. We remember the discussion about restoration of symmetries in the O4 model, the various many-body approximations. And of course, they will appear again in the following chapters, because you can never compute anything exactly. So according to my numbering, which will probably also change when I write the script, but never mind, we will now talk about the fermions. And I will introduce a very interesting model, which is due to Nambu and Jonah Lasigno. This is, in principle, nothing but a relativistic version of something that condensed matter physicists know and love. It's a model with a four-Fermi interaction. So they study this all the time. So this is Nambu and this is Jonah Lasigno. No? It's a double name. Not three, but two. And because this is much too long to always pronounce it, just call it NGL, NJL model. Okay. And now the question is how to do this 2pi action for fermions, no? The 2pi effective action for fermions. This we have not discussed now, but it's actually fairly simple. I did not make a separate chapter for this because it's basically one line, which you immediately understand, right? I mean, we derive this effective action in principle from a perturbative expression, from the generating functional for endpoint functions, and all those rules apply also for these effective actions. No? So you remember that for fermions, when you have basically any kind of loop, no? You get factors of minus one, okay? And when you have determinants, no? Which is in principle a one loop contribution, you get factors of plus one instead of minus one half, no? Right, because no, in the Gaussian integration you had for bosons, no? This was for bosons. You had square root, one over the square root of a determinant, no? And for fermions, the Grassmann integration gave you simply the determinant. Okay. Now you just have to see where you get these loops and determinants in the expression for the 2pi effective action. No? So in principle you had gamma. And then there was a classical part, which I will explain in a moment. And then for the bosons, you had minus one half trace log of the inverse three-level propagator. No? So for bosons, we had something like so classical action, minus one half trace log the inverse, no? Something like this. So this minus one half, no, this is actually log dead. No? This is actually plus log dead d to the minus one half. No, this came from the integration, from the Gaussian integration over bosonic fields. So now you apply this rule, and this minus one half must become a plus one for fermions. No? And the inverse three-level propagator, since I have already introduced G at some point for the connected two-point function, I have to make the notation consistent. I will now call this calligraphic S. No, this is the inverse three-level propagator for fermions. Okay. And this is also a one-loop term, no? As you remember, we wrote this as a one loop, and the change in sign with respect to the minus one half is also you can also attribute this to the fermionic character. Okay. And then you remember the bosonic action had something like minus 1/2 trace, d inverse, and then g minus 1. Huh? This is how we wrote this down. And this is, in principle, also one loop. Huh? So for fermions, the minus 1/2 must become plus trace. Okay. Yeah, sorry. For the 2pi effective action, this was g inverse. No? For the 1pi, it was d. But for the 2pi, it was g. So this is the correspondence. No? The connected two-point function I call for fermions, I call s instead of g, because g I used already, unfortunately, for historical reasons. Okay, so this d inverse here, no? This I will call now s. Not calligraphic. And this g here is this s calligraphic. And the minus 1 you can copy. So again, the same rule applies. So this is then wrong. This is not the three left. Sorry. This was wrong. For the 1pi, it would be correct. For the 2pi, sorry, this is the object. This is the inverse three-level propagator. And this is the connected two-point function. Sorry about this. Because we're talking 2pi, we cannot, not 1pi. So I made a mistake. OK. Good. So now we have these two terms. And then there must be a gamma 2. We have to explain at some point. Eh? So now, one important fact to realize is that fermions do not have a one-point function. Eh? If you have a one-point function for fermions, so fermion one-point function, well, this would be it. Maybe in the presence of a source, if you like. Let's call the source eta bar, as usual. Eh? For the fermions. You could also introduce a one for psi bar, if you like. No? Then the source would be eta. I mean, this means Grassmann integration over one Grassmann variable. And you know the rules for Grassmann variables. No? There was this special rule that this is always zero. No? If you have Grassmann variable integral over one, this must be zero. So you don't have fermionic one-point functions. This means there is also no classical action, because the classical action is a function of the one-point function. Huh? So well, we had S of phi here. Phi was the expectation value of the field phi, so the one-point function. If all the one-point functions for fermions vanish, there is no classical action for fermions. You can forget about this. And then you can immediately conclude that this three-level propagator also does not depend on a one-point function. And for the bosons, we had basically the relation like this. Then there was here this for the phi to the fourth theory, it was like this. No? But if all these parts that come from interactions, which depend on one-point functions, if they vanish for fermions, there's also, for fermions, no difference between three-level and free. Yeah? So you can immediately conclude this must be the free propagator for fermions. Okay? And then, of course, this object cannot depend on any one-point function. It can only depend on the connected two-point function, and the same holds for gamma 2. Okay? So this was the one-line derivation of the 2pi effective action for fermions. Okay? Clear? Or was this too heuristic? It's okay? Of course, you can do this you can do this more formally also, but the difference will not. It's clear what must come out. Né? I mean, you have these differences between factors of 1/2 and minus 1/2 and plus 1. This we accounted for. And you have the fact that the one-point function must be 0. And then you write it down. It's much simpler, né, than for bosons, because there's no expectation value for the fermionic field. Gut. Ja?
Wieso kann man da eigentlich eine klassische Action für zum Beispiel für einen Elektronenstrahl angeben?
Ja, sehr gute Frage. Weil Sie die, also wenn Sie das sozusagen nicht relativistisch machen, nicht, und so in erster Quantisierung, dann ist das die Wellenfunktion ist eine C-Zahl und die kann man auch angeben. Ja, aber Sie machen halt nicht diese Quantisierung mit Grassmann-Zahlen und antiverdauschenden Operatoren und so weiter. Da gibt es wirklich keinen Erwartungswert, nicht? Aber für diese Wellenfunktion, die ja sozusagen eine Lösung einer Wellengleichung ist, kann man schon machen. Das geht schon. Aber das geht, im Grunde geht diese ganze fermionische Natur geht ja verloren. Ja, Sie können den Spin nur wieder hinterher einführen, indem Sie dann so Spinoren dran multiplizieren und dann irgendwie Eigenschaften fordern für die Spinnenalgebra oder so. Aber im Grunde genommen, in dieser sogenannten erstquantisierten Version taucht das nicht auf. Ne? Also das ist dann so quasi klassisch. Ne? Also das ist im Prinzip die Überlegung dazu. Genau.
Ja. Sie haben also eine Bemerkung gemacht, dass man, ja, dass der Impuls ja nur für klassische Bahnen sozusagen gilt. Weil nämlich jede andere Bahn ja einen ganz total abwegigen Impuls sonst,
ja,
produzieren würde.
Ja, richtig. Ja.
Das heißt, auch der Impuls, diese ganzen, sagen wir mal, grundlegenden Aspekte, die verschwinden irgendwie in diesem Formalismus.
Also diese quantenmechanischen Prinzipien wie Unbestimmtheitsrelation und so, das gibt es natürlich schon. Das ist auch alles da drin, nicht? In dieser Quantisierung mit den Quadintegralen. Aber wie man das erfordert natürlich jetzt wieder dann die Definition, nicht? Was ist Erwartungswert von X und Varianz von X und Erwartungswert von P, Varianz von P, das kann man natürlich ausrechnen. Da steckt natürlich alles in diesen quantenmechanischen, also Phasen in dem Pfadintegral, nicht? E hoch I mal Wirkung, steckt das alles ja drin. Ja. Nicht? Also da wird nichts verletzt im Grunde genommen. Nicht? Aber also diese Art von Quantisierung, alles, was man erst quantisiert bekommt, ist drin. Nicht? Aber diese zweitquantisierten Aspekte, die kriegt man so nicht. Ja? Also das ist wirklich Null nach Eigenschaft der Grassmann-Zahl. Nicht? Also, aber man kann natürlich zwei Psis nehmen. Okay? Dann ist wieder was eine andere Story. Nicht? Wir werden das gleich sehen. Nicht? Was nicht verschwindet, sind immer nicht sowas wie Psi quer Psi. Sowas ist nicht Null. Das ist eine Zahl, eine C-Zahl. Und das kann man ausrechnen. Und das muss nicht verschwinden. Und nächste Woche oder am Freitag oder vielleicht auch heute schon, werden wir auch sehen, dass sowas nicht verschwinden muss. Nicht unbedingt. Gut, also eigentlich muss man jetzt noch Indizes dran machen, damit man sieht, was da jetzt genau passiert. Aber die Dinger müssen nicht Null sein. Ne? Zwei Grassmann-Zahlen zusammengenommen verhalten sich ja wie eine normale Zahl. Ne? Die vertauschen mit allen anderen Sachen. Nicht, weil zweimal antivertauscht ist wie einmal vertauscht. Ne? Ist okay. Kommt gleich. We will cover this. Okay. Gut. So, now an example. Ne? So I have to tell you a theory where we can compute these objects here and we also, all the interactions are of course contained in gamma 2. Ne? Then you have to again do the 2pi. So the sum of all two particle irreducible diagrams governed by the interaction of the theory. Okay, this we have to construct, but first we have to
construct a theory or take some example theory, and this is this infamous NJL model. And okay, so this is a free part, which we all know and love. This is just a Dirac, free Dirac part, okay, L0, which we all know. And then, a four-point interaction. And the four-point interaction, it has a coupling strength, which unfortunately I call also G, but this is also for historical reasons. So this, now this is the, in this section, it's the coupling strength. Maybe I have to invent another symbol eventually, so we don't have too many similar symbols. It's a constant. Yeah? And then four Fermi interaction. Okay, so let's take psi bar psi. It's always good to saturate the Dirac indices. And then let's square it. So this is a four-point interaction. A four-point interaction between the fermions. And this is, of course, fine. Yeah? It's basically a diagram which looks like this. Two fermions in, two fermions out, coupling, vertex is proportional to G, okay, the coupling strength. Yeah, and then, of course, you have to see what you do with the Dirac indices or other indices, né? In principle. This means that the alpha index and the beta index must go through, né? Of course, there are other possibilities, but we will see how this goes, no? Later on. Okay, but if you have this L, then you can compute the inverse free or inverse tree level propagator, no? No problem. So S0 of x and y is, as usual, the second derivative of the action. Action is, again, space-time integral over L, which depends on psi bar and psi. Okay, this looks like I'm talking about one-point functions. No, this is really on the quantum level. Né? The psi's are the quantum fields. But in order to compute the free propagator, inverse free propagator, you can, of course, do this with the quantum action as well. Né? So, yeah, okay, then just, okay, so you first differentiate with respect to psi. Of course, it would be good to first differentiate with respect to psi bar, because we act with these derivatives, we always act from the left. So let's change the order of the derivatives. No problem, because these are also Grassmann valued variables, so we can do it like this. Okay. And, yeah, okay. So then, if I do it this way, then I will get an X. So I have to be more clear here. Sorry about this. So I take just the free part of the action. Sorry. So I just take this part here. Yeah? This is L0. Otherwise, I run into troubles. Okay. So I compute the inverse free propagator, which we have done many times. So basically, if you want to repeat this, so there's a space-time integral, let's call it z. And let's first do the derivative with respect to psi bar of x. Yeah, so then you see this is now psi bar of z. So you get z, x, and then you get I del slash z minus m, and then psi of z. Yeah? This is what you obtain. This gives you the delta function, x minus z, as always. Okay, then the integral collapses, so you get minus functional derivative with respect to psi bar of y of I del slash x minus m psi of x. Okay, and then this acting on psi of x gives another delta function. So it's minus I del slash x minus m delta for x minus y. Okay, good. This is also what you remember maybe, that this is the inverse free propagator for fermions. Good. So now, of course, this guy here, this gamma of s, fulfills the stationarity condition, which gives rise to a Dyson-Schwinger equation. So the Dyson-Schwinger equation comes from the stationarity of gamma. So 0 equals gamma by ds. Okay, let's put some indices there, x and y. There is no stationarity with respect to any one-point function because the one-point function vanishes. Okay, so then you go through the exercise. You first take the derivative of the trace log with respect to s. And this is, in principle, the same as we did before, except for a factor plus 1/2, we now get a factor minus 1. So it's minus s inverse of x and y. Derivative of the law. So the trace is an integration over space-time indices. If you fix x and y, then you fix the xy element of this matrix that's inside of the trace. So that's why the x and y here appears again as x and y here. So the trace is gone, and then you just take log. Derivative of log is 1 over the argument. So 1 over s inverse is s. But then you also have a derivative of s inverse with respect to s, which is minus s inverse squared. So in total, you have minus s inverse. S for normal numbers, you can do it also for matrices, no problem. Okay, then the next one here, you see that actually just removes the s inside the trace and gives s 0 inverse arguments x and y. Okay, this was the same as for bosons except for the difference of factors. Instead of minus 1/2, you get plus 1. And then you get the derivative of gamma 2 with respect to s. Okay, So of course, this second part is again something like a self-energy contribution, as we will immediately see. So put this on the other side. So s inverse xy. Now this is, as you see, the Dyson-Schwinger equation for s. Yeah, let's call it sigma of x and y. This is the fermionic self-energy. For the bosonic self-energy, there was a factor minus 2, which came from the minus 1/2. Now we just have a plus 1. So this is the definition of the fermionic self-energy. And, of course, now you have to specify your many-body approximation, okay? This is again, this thing has a loop expansion in a number of loops. So you can now, with the vertex, you can write down all kinds of diagrams with all kinds of loops, which are 2pi. Okay, so let's start at the two-loop level. So gamma 2 at two-loop level. It's the simplest one. One loop, of course, this is actually all the other stuff, the trace log and so that was one loop. So this starts at the two-loop level. This is the lowest order that you can obtain in gamma 2. And how do you do this? This looks almost like in the bosonic case, except you have to watch the arrows. You cannot connect this with this, at least not as for now. See how this goes later on, but for now, no. You can only connect this outgoing with an ingoing, like this and like this, or, of course, this here. This is also possible. Topologically, I could also, it's the same topology, but combinatorially, this thing can also connect to this, and this thing can connect to this. So you get a combinatorial factor of 2. Not 3. For the bosons, we had 3. For the fermions, we can only do it in 2 different ways. Otherwise, of course, this is just one vertex, G, and 2 tadpoles, this time fermionic tadpoles. So trace S, this is the S, of course, that runs around in gamma 2, no? The full two-point function, full connected two-point function, and then just squared because you have 2 of these guys. No? This is gamma 2. And then, of course, this derivative of gamma 2 with respect to S means you open up one of the loops. No? Any functional derivative with respect to S opens up this, this one loop and removes it. So one is left. Okay? And you can do it with this or this loop. So this is the factor 2 here. When you take the functional derivative, so you get 4 times G times the trace of S. One is basically surviving. And then from opening the trace, you get, of course, also a delta function x minus y. This is what you get when you compute sigma, the self-energy for the fermions. Does this appear to be reasonable to you? Amanda, you don't look so happy, but... Doch, okay, good, fine, yeah. It's the same as for the bosons, except the trace is not only space-time trace, it's also Dirac indices. Ne? These guys here have Dirac indices. Ne? If you want to put them down, you can do this. These are matrices, 4x4 matrices in Dirac space. Ne? Yeah. Here you have to be a bit careful to get the correct indices. So if you want to do this correctly, you have to do it like this. Okay, but okay, delta, alpha, beta is better, beta, alpha, so the order is not so important. Yeah, so what is this? This was minus I del slash x minus m. And there's another constant contribution now, plus 4g trace s. Another constant contribution, another contribution proportional to delta. So in principle, you can put this stuff here together with a mass. So you will again get a fixed point equation for the mass, for the fermion mass. So if you look at this carefully, you will see that in this trace over space-time indices, there is another I hiding in the time integration, the way we define this. So in this, it's not an imaginary contribution. Eh? This minus or plus I factor, there is another I coming from the space-time integration. So when you go to momentum space, and Matsubara sums and all this kind of stuff, you will get a real contribution to the mass. So, I mean, I'm not too explicit here, but if you want, you can check, of course, all this stuff. At the end of the day, you have accounted for all the indices, or if you go to Euclidean space-time, so that all the I's disappear, then you will see that finally you will have an equation for the mass of the fermion, which looks like follows. So in momentum space, my notation was not good. because I wanted to reserve this for the solution of the fixed point equation. Why did I call it capital M? I call it capital M because that was it when we had it for the electrons, no? To this, or for the Yukawa theory. Let me change the notation. Let me call this small m. So this is the free mass, no? And now this gets corrected by some contribution from this tadpole. So of course, this is then a constant contribution. So you could write this. The ansatz for this is, of course, the same as always in these. Oh, sorry. There's also nothing to worry about ice, because I made another mistake. So the ansatz is that you put all the constant stuff together with m. So forget about what I said about i's and so forth. Of course, they do not appear. The I is in front of del slash here. No? OK. So now you compare, no, left and right-hand sides. So the capital M here is little m minus minus plus 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 4g trace s. And in momentum space, trace s is T over V, sum over K, S of K. Okay, but this S has Dirac indices, so you also need a trace over Dirac indices. Okay, fine. So this is now a fixed point equation, because this guy here in momentum space, as you can see, this is in momentum space 1 over, oh, sorry. Let me write it as m minus k slash inverse. This is what you do when you Fourier transform this thing. And then trace over this. OK, so of course we know how to do this. So this is basically m squared minus k squared, m plus k slash, OK? The usual trick how to write a fermionic propagator. And then, of course, you trace over Dirac indices. And then you realize, yeah, ooh, here's a gamma mu hiding k mu gamma mu. No? Trace over gamma mu is 0. Trace over 1, Dirac matrix is 0. So only this term survives. So it's m plus 4g t over v, sum over k. M, another m, capital M. OK, trace over unit matrix is 4. No? There's a 4 by 4 unit matrix here. So there's another factor of 4. OK. And, na gut, it's m plus 16g, an integration over momentum, spatial momentum. And then a Matsubara sum over the fermionic Matsubara frequencies. Yeah, the m I can also pull out here. This is just some constant, the solution of this fixed point equation. And then I just have to compute 1 over m squared minus k squared can also be written as you know, epsilon k squared minus k0 squared. This is the fermionic Matsubara frequency, so minus I 2n plus 1 pi t. Squared. And the epsilon k is the dispersion relation, no? K squared plus capital M squared. Also the solution of this fixed point equation. No? So M is on the left, M appears here, and M appears in the denominator, in the energy dispersion. OK. Now, we have computed these fermionic Matsubara Matsubara sums before. No? You remember how this goes. So at least this part here, you know how to do this. Has been a couple of months, but you can look it up. And this is basically 1 over 2 epsilon k hyperbolic tangent epsilon k over 2t. No? This is what was the result. Or if you want to write it in terms of the Fermi-Dirac distribution function, 1 over epsilon k, 1 half minus 1 over e to the epsilon k over t plus 1. OK? I did not introduce a chemical potential. I could have done this, but I want to, for the purpose of this section, I don't need to do this. 2n plus 1. So, OK. So, very good. This is again the zero point energy. We know zero point energy. Fermions fluctuate. And this is the thermal contribution. As always, no? This is the thermal contribution from the fermions. And so now you have this fixed point equation for the mass. You can complete this. So it's m plus 16g, capital M, integration over momenta. One half minus 1 e to the epsilon k over t plus 1. OK. So this is the fixed point equation that you have to solve. Sometimes this is also called gap equation because of the mass gap. No, I already mentioned this. But in principle, it's a fixed point equation for M. And you have to do solve this numerically. No? I mean, it's not possible to write this except for the zero mass case, which would then be trivial. You cannot write down these integrals. No? And of course, this diverges like crazy here. No? The zero point energy you would, in principle, have to renormalize. No? The problem is the NGL model is not renormalizable. No? These four-point fermion interactions. This G is a dimensionful coupling constant. You remember our discussion in quantum field theory. The four-point Fermi interaction is a dimension 6 operator, which is not renormalizable in four dimensions. So this G has actually dimension inverse energy squared to compensate for the 6 powers of energy from the four-point interaction. So in principle, you don't need to do all these tricks. Yeah? You can just, and that's also what people usually do, you just introduce a cutoff on this momentum integration with a parameter that you use to fix properties of the model you would like to reproduce, properties in nature that you would like the model to reproduce. Yeah? OK, so let's do it. And the important thing is that there's a difference in sign between the vacuum and the thermal contribution. This has some consequence, as I will show you in a moment. Good. So let's look at the vacuum contribution. And as I advertised, you will just replace the upper boundary on the K integral by the factor 1/2. You can also adjust for later. Let's look at this integrals. At this integral, so the upper boundary will be, so the modulus of k will be cut off at some scale lambda. Then this is all fine. So then you realize you can do the integration over solid angle, okay? And then you just have to integrate over the modulus of k, which I call k. Okay. So cut off regularization. No renormalization. It's not renormalizable, so we just need to regularize it with the cutoff. Okay, then you look up your tables of integrals, and then you find, first you introduce a dimensionless integration variable x by dividing out the m. Ne? So x is k over m. So then it's an integral dx, x squared over square root of x squared plus 1. This was the trick. And then you look up your tables of integrals, and you find this is over 4 pi squared x square root x squared plus 1 minus log x plus square root x squared plus 1 between 0 and lambda over m. Okay. So this can be analytically solved with a cutoff. And then you see at the lower boundary you get 0. Ne? So you just have a contribution from the upper boundary, which is lambda square root of... Now I multiply m into the parentheses, so then it's lambda squared plus m squared minus logarithm of lambda plus square root lambda squared plus m squared. The log, of course, has a in principle, a contribution. It doesn't, because I just divide by m. Okay, good. So this is what you get from the upper boundary. Exactly. This is what it is. And then, of course, lambda should be much, much larger than any physical scale in the problem, so in this case, the mass. So you can easily approximate this. If lambda is much, much larger, then you can drop the m here and here. So you get 1 over 4 pi squared, and then it's lambda squared minus... and I forgot, of course, the m squared in front of the log. If you multiply the m squared inside, there's also an m squared in front of the log. So it's m squared log lambda over m. And then you see, this is a large number, but it's under the log. This is very large, and this is not large. This is small as compared to this. So if the log is large, but if there's a small coefficient multiplying the log, you can also forget about the log. And it's just lambda squared over 4 pi squared. Okay. In the large lambda limit. Lambda over m much larger than 1. This is correct. So this is your contribution from the vacuum here after regularization with a cutoff. Okay. Good. And then the other integral is converges. Ne? The Fermi-Dirac distribution function cuts off high momenta at the scale of the temperature. So no problem. Ne? But you have to do this integral numerically. And you should note that the vacuum and thermal, as I said already, vacuum and thermal contributions differ by a sign. I will come back to this in a moment. So the vacuum fluctuation vacuum fluctuations contribute positively to M, but the thermal negatively. Okay. All right. Perfect time to take a short break. So after introducing this, we will discuss implications for symmetry restorations in after the break. No? So we will talk about how symmetry restoration appears in this kind of model. You can also write it in a form which has a chiral symmetry, which I will do then in a moment. And this chiral symmetry can be restored by thermal fluctuations, like in the bosonic case. Okay, and how this is done, I will show you after the break. Okay, so far so good. Let's take a 10-minute break.